Welcome back to another week of the Geek Whisperers. My name's John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm Matt Brender.
Well, you've tuned in to a very special episode here on the Geek Whisperers. There's no guest. Yes, that's right. There's no guest. It's just the three of us. If we annoy you, turn off the podcast now. Well, that's a terrible advice, isn't it?
No, I think it's accurate.
Yeah, I think they're causally connected.
Well, if we annoy you, why did you subscribe to this podcast? Anyway, it's a podcast with just the three of us. We thought it was time to put our heads together and kind of take stock of what's been going on for a long time. Listeners of the podcast know we've all transitioned into new jobs and new roles in the past year or so. And we've also transitioned the podcast into talking about kind of careers and people and their careers and kind of what they do and what successful people do and things like that. But I thought today we'd talk about a little bit about what we're doing and how in our new roles and our new jobs, how some of our tactics have changed and how that's affected our jobs and what we do every day.
That's sort of interesting. Do tactics always need to change over time? What are the factors that drive them? Just inside baseball, as we like to say. I always talk to John and Matt about what they're doing so I can get some new ideas. So I admit openly this podcast is just shopping for some ideas.
I also think it's one of those things that until we decided that we were going to reflect on it, we don't even know what we've changed in our day-to-day. But I'm sure just from touching base before this recording that quite a lot has changed and we're kind of all finding a very different groove. It'd be fun to reflect.
Okay, Maddie, well, you're up first. So your new gig, why don't you refresh people's memory what your actual kind of title and company you're looking for?
Absolutely. I'm a senior developer advocate, not because I'm old or because I've done it before, but I'm the senior developer advocate at Basho Technologies, focused on developers in the NoSQL space.
Okay. You're working with open source and with developers, and so that seems like a whole different world than both EMC and Infinio.
It's fantastically different. So when you talk about the people, there's been a pretty clear trend since I got into community building that it's all been attached to the virtualization community. We all come from this, space of the virtualization community being just such a huge influence on what each and every one of us are doing and what the companies we've been working for are doing. And then that stemmed into, the storage and virtualization or backups and virtualization. But virtualization has always been this theme. What's so different right now is that I'm in a different part of the technical conversation, discussing open source contribution strategies of a mature startup while also digging into developer stacks and the kind of new agey infrastructure, but really talking to people that are coding as opposed to even people that are learning to code infrastructure. It's like, no, they're really just coding the front part, not the back parts.
I got stuck on new agey infrastructure. I'm just picturing somebody in the Lotus positioning, just envisioning, a new application.
Well, I'm thinking the anti-waterfall methodology of engineering, where there's possibly no one born and has worked in a company where they didn't use Scrum and 1,000 different tools over the internet to communicate. Let me take a step back and talk about a little bit more about my audience. That the conversations I've mostly been having have to do with front-end developers choosing a distributed database over something that's a relational database because of the scale and complexity of their infrastructure. That automatically means that people are either in the sort of quote-unquote big data world because they're dealing with distributed systems, lots of data that can't fit on one physical or virtual system. So that leads to a different sort of system architect, somebody that is past looking at storage and virtualization and thinking about a much kind of broader set of data analytics and how they're storing it, how they're retrieving it and analyzing it. So that also leads to data scientists, which is a very stats heavy group of people that are developers as well, but slightly different audience. From, say, the other group. Like, I've gotten to spend some time with developers at Uber who design absolutely awesome code, and consume services and are building the microservice infrastructure. So it's, I can't actually place a single group of people. I can definitely see that there's more gender balance, which is refreshing to see.
And Matt, you're ruining some perfectly good stereotypes. Let's start with one from the infrastructure side of the fence that you have just outlined, that there are, we often, and everybody's guilty of this, we throw DevOps in one big pool and stir, but not all DevOps are created equal is what I'm hearing.
Well, actually, I would say that DevOps has been categorized as a conversation that companies like EMC are really attacking because they're infrastructure people who are automating, and it's more familiar to them. I'm not even talking to people that are in the DevOps world. I'm talking to developers. They don't really care about how ops works for the most part. Some of them do, of course, or they wouldn't actually like our product because it's very ops friendly. So it's interesting. It's just a totally different angle on the same picture. And that's taught me to kind of care a little less instinctually about the things I care a lot about.
Okay, so you, that's a too much of a tease. So what are the things you have to care less about?
Have you thrown metrics out the window?
Oh, my God. Almost. No.
Dang it. I thought I had him, John.
Storage latency, so, I/O latency. What have you thrown out?
Talking about caring a lot about the spinning media underneath your storage and the file system.
So, Matt, I want to get down to, clearly you are engaged with a different audience. I know this because I'm not seeing you at the events anymore. I'm at a different set. You're at a different set. So we're seeing different people. How has that changed tactics? What are you doing day to day? What has changed?
Oh, what's fun to see is actually what's very different and then the things that are very much the same. So to start from the comfortable, I am going to events, and just about the same amount that I went to at any other company when I was doing community building. That said, they happen to be totally different events. I'm going to the Stratas that are run by O'Reilly, that are more data analytics focused and data science and big data stuff. And then I'm going to anything that ends in con, it seems to be the phrase.
The naming
convention. Put star con now. So I'm going to GlueCon, QCon, I'm sure there's some other cons that I'm disrespecting right now. Yeah, the MetaCon. Yeah.
Comic-Con?
Comic-Con. No. Totally no, just counts. The developer ones. And then GoTos, which are also developer ones. So I've noticed there's a lot of events. What's incredibly different is that almost all of them are significantly smaller than the tens of thousands of people. It's usually hundreds of people to a few thousand people. So it's much more intimate. And that has led to a few different tactics, but kind of more, but there's also always that, you know, personal touch of just chatting with people and, you know, being interested in what they're interested in and then exchanging information and then grabbing a beer when you can. So some of it's very familiar, but like the scale, there's a lot more small ones as opposed to that one big one where you have to get it all in at once.
Well, and just to jump in again, I always love direction in this kind of idea, curation, because you're going to bunches of them, and not that you have to pick one vendor over the other, but if somebody's dipping their toes into this and they might want to enter the world of cons, what are some tips, tricks, thoughts, how to find the right ones for themselves? Do they have wildly different flavors, et cetera?
The quick answer is yes. Just pick something and go to it. And the other thing is that they're all vastly different. So if you find one you don't like, don't think that that's all of them. What's really cool is that they tend to be broken out either by language preference. So whether you're into Ruby or Python or Scala or Golang, or they are broken out by subject matter. So big data tends to really focus in on Apache Spark lately. If you're going to a go-to event, it's focused on developer tracks. So like, how do you code for distributed systems? How do you code for this other stuff? So kind of zoom in on one topic and try to attack it. The one other tactic that's really fun lately for me is that I find I follow up with people as much on GitHub as I do in email.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
And that has been probably my favorite shift in the job role. I spend as much time in GitHub as I do in my inbox.
Getting your Chomsky degree back on, huh?
What's even funnier is that most of my contributions aren't code. It's because I understand the code. I go and write documentation and update things and communicate with people. So I'm still doing all the community communication type things. But just this week, actually, I reached out to somebody who wrote an amazing library of code that we really wanted to use as part of our actual code that Basho engineers are developing. And yes, it's open source, so we could just take it. That's no problem. But there's, you know, there's something to be said for asking politely. So I opened up in GitHub a request to do so. And the gentleman from Amsterdam was thrilled and now is going to be a contributor back to what we're building, which is on top of his project. Mm. So sort of being that curator of, all right, let's find a beautiful nugget in the vast quantity of stuff on GitHub and then use that as a pivot point to building our community, but also, you know, giving us a foot up on whatever code we're trying to build.
I think that's really helpful for any of our listeners. Oops, we're accidentally talking about career again, because I know it can be difficult to explain what you do. And we've had a couple folks on trying to jump us into this community. That was really helpful, I think. It's just kind of a tactical nugget, but gives some insight into, if that floats your boat, that could be an interesting career path for somebody who might be at a pivot point in their career and maybe wants to go a little more in this direction.
Yeah, and two other code-based things that I absolutely love lately is the developers hate using PowerPoint. So they're all using open source alternatives that are code. What's nice is I've used them too, like reveal.js. So somebody started a deck for a presentation, and instead of asking him to convert it to PowerPoint like he dreaded I was going to, I actually went and, you know, forked his code and edited it and sent it back to him. And he's like, this is the coolest thing that's happened in marketing ever.
You look totally geeked out there. There's like a prize for you somewhere for that one.
Yeah, yeah. And so that sort of being credible as a technologist, but also just being helpful with, you know, telling a story and working on README files and GitHub repos so that when somebody finds something, it makes sense to them. Like, I'm still doing very much what feels normal to me, which is just helping people communicate. I just happen to be using different mediums.
Hmm. One more specific channel that I think we might want to talk about, to Amy's question of how do you get started or how do you get in there, is our meetups and meetup.com. I'm seeing in this kind of dev space and the open source space a lot of use of meetup.com with the companies I'm talking with. And in fact, I was at a meetup last night and somebody from the VMware community was there and they had just recently moved to the Bay Area and they were like, yeah, I'm doing meetups, a lot of meetups all the time, both to, you know, get me out of the house, but also just to meet people and to find, you know, explore different topics I'm interested in. So I don't know, Matt, you're also doing meetups, I believe, right?
Yeah, I'm actually glad you brought it up because I think I've gotten so normalized to it, I forgot it's different. Because I'm on meetup.com every day lately trying to find what events are up to, are happening in my area. And I'm also sending people in my geodispersed team like events that might be cool for them to attend. Cool. So I'm curating, like, you know, engineers all over the United States, slash also, you know, planning my own schedule. And I go to like one or two a week lately because they're just, I'd say 99% of them are free and they're really good tech talks. The smallest one I go to that I consistently go to is called Software Craftsmanship. And it's actually just a group of really hardcore developer nerds who are just want to teach people to code better. And it's a lot of paired programming, kind of hanging out together, writing some code and some presentations on how to code well. And it's topical. Hmm. And it's phenomenal. It's better than, God, it's better than some of the classes I took in my computer science degree.
Oh, that's awesome. If I had to create a straw man of a marketing person, I think this kind of stuff terrifies them because it's really hard work. It's retail politics. It's like it's city after city. I mean, I joke that it's retail politics, right? Like pancake breakfast and kissing babies. It's shaking hands. It's going city by city. It's actually meeting people in groups of 10 and 20 and 50 and 100. Like that's, I don't know. My straw man marketer just likes to like buy ad campaigns through their agency and not actually do the work.
Yeah, I get asked this question all the time, and I was just going to say, sort of leading into another question I had for Matt, people say, how do I get started? How do I go out and meet those people? And I am such a fan of meetup.com, too. It's just, it's unbelievable the resource it is. And it is affordable, like you said. It's either free or you don't have to travel far. you get to meet technologists in your area that hopefully you'll click with and be able to engage with in different ways. You know, if you're just on a career path and want to hunt for a job, it's a great way to get out and get to different communities and sort of get a feel for jobs that are available in the area. It's totally target rich. And to your point, John, when I bring it up, I think it's nowhere near as sexy as going, oh, well, there's this tier one or tier two. I guess that's internal marketing speak for a really big event, right? Mm-hmm. So people get this concept of, you know, they get event goggles, right? If it's not super huge, 20,000 people in attendance, then it's not as cool. But the meetups are, they're amazing. There's just such a way to touch base with the community and to give back. There's an opportunity, you know, not to just be an attendee. Like, I'm trying to step up my game and get back to help and support some meetups locally and gather people together, not around necessarily my company flag, but just because, you know, we're all out here in North Carolina. There's some tech action, but it's great to put people together and make a community of like-minded people across a lot of different areas.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this goes back to kind of the classic product manager question of how do I make a million of something? And you can either make this pristine factory where you have a million churn out in a set amount of time and you've got that upfront investment, or you communicate to a million people and have each one of them make one. And I see developers as much more of the latter style. It doesn't seem like you're going to get a gathering of 50,000 developers, at least in the space I'm in. Even if there are 50,000 out there, they all self-select into much smaller tribes, and you have to take the time to go and communicate to them if that is your goal. And that's very much my goal.
So what's the biggest change in tactics? Because clearly these kind of DevOps events, you talked about scale, right? The size of them is wildly different than the typical vendor-driven tech event. How does it change how you engage?
I think the most obvious way is the GitHub versus email thing. Mm-hmm. I think the least obvious way is one of the social expectations that I always felt obligated as somebody that was knowledgeable in storage technology at EMC to be certain of an answer and to presume as an expert that I knew the right answer, especially when it came down to like disk.io and processing storage performance. But what I love about this developer scene is that pretty much no one's assuming they have the 100% right answer, even if they're really talented and really knowledgeable. Everyone is in learning mode, and it's because everything's changing every day. I found that I'm able to say more often than I ever was that I don't know what someone's talking about. And maybe that's a confidence thing with me, but it does seem to be more acceptable in this group. And then what the other thing is, you just go Google it right away and go learn it. So it's just a different learning process where, like, storage virtualization, it's all out there. You should be able to go pick it up, and people expect you to know it. This is very much like, I don't know. I haven't read that paper. Okay, well, what's it about? Explain it to me.
Well, that's nice. That sounds actually very open and very cool for discourse.
So obviously, Matt, I haven't been seeing you at all the same events and sort of joking about DevOps events are different. But something I have to call out, John, is not only are you going to be at different events, you are now going to be throwing an event, hosting an event. So that has to be wildly different. I'm really interested how that perspective has changed. You were always such an integral part of the multi-ring circus that was VMworld. How does it look when you're on kind of the other side of the offense? Because even though you did tons of work, that's not in dispute at all. It's very different when you're doing all the work and you're the central figure and throwing your own event. How has that changed? We've got the reckoning coming up.
Yeah, I never wanted to throw an event. I always thought events were way too much work. And so now I find myself, you know, throwing one by myself, basically, or with the help of my team. And so, the reckoning is coming up. It's coming together. There are so many details. I do have some event people helping me. But, I mean, even just yesterday, I was at CoreOS Fest. And it suddenly occurred to me, badges. I need badges. I have no idea how to print badges. What am I going to do? Are there vendors? Are there printers? Do I have to rent something? Who do I call? What do I do? So there's all these details from, you know, tickets and, getting the speakers together and accommodations and, you know, am I going to have a shuttle to the airport because I'm throwing it out here on the coast and, you know, should there be activities, you know, before the event and the list is endless. And so it is for someone who's used to dealing with people stuff and kind of creative ideas, having this huge spreadsheet and checklist of stuff is, that part is not fun. So that's a different tactic.
It gives you a whole new respect for folks who work in that events industry and do it flawlessly. I have to say, shout out to our brothers and sisters in that field, because we have all gone to a million of these things, and your work is most obvious when we don't know you're there, right? When it's flawless and there's no complaints.
Oh, I had huge respect for them. I just knew that I never wanted to do it.
Fair.
But no, it's coming together. It's awesome. I'm really looking forward to it. So that's going to be a lot of fun. You know, I'm still looking for sponsors, et cetera, et cetera.
Any details you can leak, we won't tell anyone.
You know, stay tuned. Sign up for the newsletter, I guess. Someone described it the other day as TED Talks for IT. I guess I'll go with that. So I think if that kind of thing intrigues you, you know, keep your eyes open.
Awesome. I'm in.
Well, good.
I'm still on the fence.
Well, what can I do to put you in a car today, Matt? And I've been going to a lot of different events myself, depending on the clients I'm working with and things like that. And I've been speaking at more events, too. So that's also different.
And I wanted to ask, too, like sort of a broader question, and maybe to Matt and John, you're both attending events, different events, and attending events differently. Do you have a sense that the age of the overlarge infrastructure vendor event is gone? Do you think we're past this moment of largesse and we're moving into the craft beer kind of phase of more intimate, different, et cetera? Or is it just our eyes have changed?
That's a tough one. I think we are at a point where there are many, many events, possibly too many, that may have to do with some sort of a bubbly behavior in the tech market. It's not quite, you know, 1999, but there's a lot of activity. There is a natural finite limit imposed by physics and people's budgets of just how many events you can go to. So I'm not sure we can get a whole lot more. I don't know. Matt, any thought here?
Yeah. I think I've seen two classifications in the little bit of analysis I've done of this. And one of them is, I'd say, probably 80%. Just to be very unscientifically metrics driven about this, is that 80% of them would love to be as big as the big tech vendor shows that we've been going to. So I don't think it's out of disinterest. It's more just out of familiarity. I think it's an order of magnitude more to deal with tens of thousands of people, and it's difficult. So no, I don't think they're going away. I think people are trying to aspire to them through different topics now. The other grouping, though, is kind of the counter of that, where they have intentionally capped the number of attendees to less than a few hundred or less than 1,000, and have no intention whatsoever of growing. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe the craft beer fest of events is also on the horizon. I think as long as people can become potential leads for some sort of company to make money on, events will continue to happen. I think the smaller events are less immediately sales-driven or more winning hearts and minds still. And yeah, echoing John's of there's just a ton out there.
That's good. That's a good point. You're right. Even like my event, The Reckoning, I don't ever want it to be huge, right? And it's modeled after other events that have kept themselves pretty small. It's just a different experience. You know, I want to create an experience that's interesting for people and that's meaningful and that's, you come away inspired. And it's hard to do when there's 25,000 people with you.
Yeah.
I do want to pivot, John, because I'm so interested in the people you've been talking to lately. I do have the good fortune of having your ear more often than others. And I think you've gone into a land of an intersection of startups and the people surrounding startups that I don't know if you anticipated talking to. So can you tell people like the kind of conversations you're having lately?
Sure. I'm doing consulting for a number of different companies. I guess I was saying just before we hit record, I have a lot of handshakes right now. I haven't seen the contracts yet. So, I mean, I've been consulting the whole time, but I have a whole new set of them that are just, again, I want to see the contracts before I give out any names. But they tend to be more startups. They tend to be people who want to use their communities or get their arms around their user groups and their community action a little better. But I'm also doing media surrounding that. So once you have that community, how do you talk to them? And what do you, you know, how do you create, how do you talk with them basically? Because your normal marketing materials don't work. And so a couple of the companies and my clients I'm working with, I'm doing podcasts with, because I just think these day and age, it's a pretty nice way to talk directly to somebody with a human voice, and it's not too polished, and you can't go back and, I mean, you can ruin a podcast too. I've seen it, but it's a little harder. You know, one of the podcasts I'm doing is the Nutanix podcast. I'm helping produce that, and you know, it's geeks talking to geeks, right? You can't really get much better than that. It's not slick at all. You know, we're still working on some production stuff, but that's kind of behind the scenes. So, no, it's not, Matt, to your question, it's not quite the audience I thought I would be doing, but it certainly is, a lot of fun. It's also not, it's some of my clients are people who want to talk to the VMware community, but it really spans the gamut. I am working with clients that are working with containers, that are working in DevOps, that are, you know, continuous integration. So, all along the tech spectrum, software, developer, and infrastructure.
See, I feel like we should put you in the hot seat we always put our guests in and say, is this the consultancy you thought you'd have when you grew up?
You know, it's getting there. I'm finding it difficult to scale past one person. I do work with a couple of different contractors, but, you know, the real challenge is my time and how I allocate that. One client too many and I'm working 60-hour weeks, you know, one client too few and I'm not making what I need to make. You know, it's not a regular paycheck.
Well, yeah. And the craft beer analogy feels like it works because a couple things, just observing as an outsider, you've done some hosting gigs and some speaking gigs. So mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's calling on different skills than maybe you thought you would put into play, you know, initially, because maybe, I don't know, I'm putting words in your mouth, but it seems like you go into a consultancy, you think, you know, I will go and opine behind the scenes and have strategy and do certain tasks. But you've been asked to be a fairly public figure, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, that is true. I thought I would just be operational and doing, like, making vExpert programs for other companies and teaching them how to do that. But you're right. I just got through a conference where I went and was a video host. I'm talking with a couple people about doing podcasts and co-hosting with them. So there is something. The content is hard. Right, making content is hard, and so anybody who can help a company make content that's interesting is super valuable. And sometimes that's being technical, sometimes that's being a good talker, sometimes whatever, right? It just turns out that companies are still struggling around producing interesting content, and I don't know, it just seems to be a gap. So it's fun, it's a good gig when I can get it. I'll stand up on stage and bang pots together, you know. That's kind of what I did at VMware.
You're being John Troyer, and the more John Troyer you are, the better it gets.
More or less. You know, it is a little bit hard because I am trying to teach a man to fish too. So, you know, it can't just be the John Troyer show for, you know, XYZ company. I mean, it can be, but that really wasn't. It's not the goal, right? I'm trying to get them to do it themselves. But I'm finding that, you know, that's hard and it's expensive and it takes a lot of time and not everybody is cut out for that. So I don't know. Maybe it does have to be the John Troyer show. I didn't ask for this crown. I'm just wearing it.
Yeah, maybe I don't understand because, you know, if I hire a DJ or a musician, I don't expect them to come and teach me how to play their music. I just ask them to play.
That's a good analogy. Yeah, I'm struggling with that a little bit. So, but you're right.
Well, and one of the other kind of interesting differences, how have you found that it's both the freedom because you're doing this more independently? Like you said, you've got some folks you're working with, you know, the team is, you've got some resources, but, you know, pros and cons, because you were in a world where you were part of a larger group, but then all corporations have a slower process and go to market is a slower thing. How has that changed what you're able to do or tactics you're able to pilot or try? How have you found that's changed you?
Hmm. Well, I am pretty much a one-man band, so I can do anything I want. I mean, the converse of that is, you know, if I take the afternoon off, nothing gets done. That's been an interesting adjustment. In general, it's pretty good. I'm making it up as I go along. I just try to follow in the footsteps of people who have gone before me, you know, setting prices, setting up contracts, how to do stuff. You know, I don't know. It is easier to work with startups because they are easier to do a handshake with. I am a certified vendor of one or two larger companies, and that is really challenging, right? You got to go through the whole process, and you know, is there budget, and you know, it just takes a long time for a big public company. So I enjoy working with startups more because you just kind of go, yeah, let's do it, and you do it.
And I also like your very practical advice, because I think a lot of people have thought about going out on their own or doing this sort of thing, and it's good to know that just some practical thoughts on how you put one foot in front of the other and how you figure that out.
Yeah, well, I mean, the pricing is kind of a dark art for everything, right? And I've raised my rates because I'm busy, so it's good, and I think I'm adding something valuable that people can't get other places. You know, I don't want to get stuck in consulting, though. What I really want to do is kind of build out the Tech Reckoning community and the Tech Reckoning mailing list and a Tech Reckoning site. And so by being a little bit more selective in my consulting and taking on these new clients and charging them a little more, that lets me pull back a little bit and carve out some time to work on my own projects, which is what I wanted to do a year ago. So it's all coming together just a little slower than I had imagined.
Well, and I also want to bring back that point as we use this show for a bit of reflection. I think about conversations we've had over the last year and a half. And one of the earlier ones we had is I remember distinctly with Ethan Banks, if you're not careful about your intellectual property, then you don't get paid for anything. If you give everything away for free, you know, or devalue it, it becomes permanently devalued. So I think there's something to be said there of knowing the rate, charging the right thing, and not apologizing for it, because that kind of work is valuable, and you got to put a price tag on it for people to pay.
Well, also, there's an art to figuring out what you're doing for somebody. And I think it's the same thing as an art to making a program inside of a company. I have had lots of conversations with people where there's been fabulous conversations, and we were very simpatico, and we synced up, and we gave each other advice, and we talked about the market and what they should do and what the problems they were facing. But then at the end of the conversation, it's like, okay, well, what am I going to pay you for? Like, I'd like to work with you, but what are we doing? And there have been sometimes when we can't come up with something that I'm willing to do or that they need me to do that they would pay me for. It's just not practical, either for money, or they don't really need something done. They just kind of needed to vent, or they needed a little bit of advice, but they don't need, you know, some ongoing help or something that would require me in either an advisory or an operational role. So that's been interesting, that just sometimes it's you both like each other and want to work with each other, but you can't quite come up with a project to work on. I didn't expect that.
It takes me back to some of your early advice that I repeat early and often, which is a program has to have a name and deliverables.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? And a consultancy eventually kind of needs to productize its offerings. It's taken me a year.
This also just echoes so much what we talk about when it comes to our brilliant technical audience, like that we have geeks and nerds who have great knowledge and they want to share it with others, and they don't necessarily package it well. I don't think you expected that you needed to figure out your own packaging for your consultancy, but I think that's one and the same. It's you need to figure out who your audience is and then translate what you have into what they might want.
People are simplistic. And people are kind of simplistic, and they don't pay a lot of attention. So the more simple of a headline you can put on your forehead, sometimes that smooths things out. Oh, he's the tech talk guy. Oh, he's the brown bag guy. Oh, he's the she's the scripting gal, or you know, whatever. I don't know. It's sometimes useful labels to have a headline. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's the reason Twitter works, right? And headline writers will always. Don Draper was Don Draper for a reason, right? Headline writers will always have jobs.
I don't know. That seems hopelessly reductive, but maybe that's a geeky way of thinking about it. It's a marketing thing, right? You gotta be about one thing. That thing can change, but often you gotta be about one thing.
So speaking of that one thing, let's talk to our resident unicorn whisperer. slash unicorn enthusiast slash bacon enthusiast. Amy Lewis, what are you doing lately?
That's a great question.
What would you say you do here?
What do I do here? It's interesting because as we talk about packaging, it's so important. And it's important when you change jobs, you're the new kid until you're not the new kid, right? And that means you better get good at that elevator pitch, right? And it's very useful. So I think one of the advantages of changing jobs is figuring out who you are and what you're doing, right? In a new context.
So what is your elevator pitch, Amy? What's your headline?
Yeah, my headline is, it's a lot what it was before, is I am managing the space between the paid analysts and, you know, you've got AR and PR and IR, and I'm everybody else. I'm that gray area of people who are influential but aren't paid to do so. And I am scheduled and charged with engaging them and creating programs and content for and with them, and then explaining them back to the company as needed, being that Rosetta Stone. That's it. It's people, platform, and content. It's my favorite three circles and it's amazing how much it falls into those buckets. It really is. It's still things like alternative media. So whereas a traditional PR person, like we've talked about a million times, would go to those channels that we all know about, you know, the Tech Targets, the Forbes, the this, that, and the other. We're talking to people who are alternative media, people who run podcasts. So more the craft artisanal approach.
It's all about the craft beer. And so you're also creating some of your own channels, right?
Absolutely. So borrow the channels when you can and create your own when you need to, and use them always to listen first and talk second. So we do have a new podcast at Solid Fire called Elements of Solid Fire, which is kind of a play on how they do code releases by the elements, which, again, I'm geeking out in my former chemistry self. And one of the coolest things that we've done, a slight derivation on the Roving Reporter program I started when I was at Cisco, is we weren't able to scramble a video crew to a smaller event that we were going to, but I still wanted a way to capture content, really do quality content, but without kind of all the bells and whistles involved, right? And I bought a $90 digital recorder, and we got together and said, okay, we're going to ask everybody, like Jay Leno, we're going to ask everybody these same three questions. A couple people went out and just did a fantastic job with it. So that was our pilot, and that's an alternative way for, as Matt was saying, you know, we've got folks going out to some of these automation, you know, everything con, and also field marketing. It becomes a great way to scale content creation. So everybody we want to talk to is not in the 20,000 at a vendor-led event. We've got to find ways to build content at these smaller, more intimate venues. I think the audience has changed.
I love it. Well, I love audio content for one thing, and you know, so kudos for that. I think sometimes it's a lot more intimate and effective than video.
And the secret, and this is awesome. I'm going to tell this one on my friend Chris Murs, who had never done this kind of interviewing before. He's done plenty of speaking. He is an engineer's engineer. He's unbelievably bright. And this was a way for, like, we've known this secret for a while, and we're about to reveal it, that when you have a microphone, no matter if you are naturally shy or just not prone to pouncing on people and asking them questions, if you've got a microphone, it gives you a different kind of authority, and you can have different conversations with people. And Chris did this amazing job going out and talking to people where he was clearly peer-to-peer. He could, you know, he literally captured the hallway conversation, and it was amazing. So he brings that flavor. And my other colleague, Kelly, has a journalist background. And so she was able to do it kind of from that other direction. She's also deeply technical and really brought out interesting things in people. So my secret for people thinking about trying this, $90 and either learn to edit or hire an audio editor, and you can create some really interesting content, and you can create new new rock stars within your environment.
I think it's a great program. I think it's very effective. I love the deputizing other people aspect of it. in these roles, we're often expected to do a lot and be jacks of all trades. And I think being able to deputize people actually is make a virtual team that way is super effective.
Well, and especially if you're in a case where you've got maybe a veteran of a lot of conferences, it's a great way to breathe new energy into what they're doing too, because they have a different way to go at their conference. You know, maybe they've always been the speaker, or maybe they, you know, they are such that expert, they've been the speaker for a long time. It's an interesting thing. It puts them in a different role as a listener and, you know, an authorized listener to go out and kind of really meet the people they've listened mm-hmm. to speak and learn from. It's pretty cool.
And very effective as a piece of media, and something that's actually worth listening to, right? You can also, you can start for $90. Don't talk to any audio people or musicians or people like
or
that.
Or John.
Or me, because I'll sell you a $350 mic before the night's over. we're working on it. I have a big wish list. Maybe we should upgrade. But, well, so Amy, bringing it back to the career thing, I think you kind of invented this role for yourself. And so, you know, you're still in that first phase of it. So let's hope that it's what you planned it to be. I don't know. Is this a traditional marketing career? Is this – I think that you like this part of marketing more than, I don't want to speak for you, but, you know, there's lots of other parts of marketing, I guess. Actually, though, you're doing more events these days too, I understand. So I don't know, how does this relate to kind of the traditional marketing as she has spoke?
I think it's a great question. And sort of leading off when I was saying, you've got to go explain yourself, you've got to elevator pitch yourself. I have found over and over again that when you're doing something new, you better relate it back to something people understand. And you're right. I'm absolutely guilty as charged. I am drawn to the outside edge of marketing. I work with unbelievably smart and talented people who are drawn to all different aspects of marketing, some of them more traditional than others. And I'm learning a ton. To be honest, one of the big changes I've seen in between a big environment and a small environment, people wear more hats, obviously, mm-hmm. in a smaller environment. And, you know, even though everybody's moving at unbelievable breakneck speed, it has afforded me this opportunity to watch their process up close and to learn a lot more about how the pieces of traditional marketing are put together and how the machine works. In a way, it's just hard to see at a company like Cisco because there's so many people so specialized that it's like attempting to see how a car is put together a la assembly line, you know, when you're up close at it with a magnifying glass. Right? It's so hard to get that 20,000 foot view. And here you can, it's scaled such that I can. So what it's taught me in some ways is what I'm not and what I don't do. And also, org chart girl that I am, it's reinforced my idea that people who do the kind of marketing I do, which is kind of very hands-on, right now I sit in corp communications and it actually makes a lot of sense. And they often, people talk about it as influencer relations. And I'm asked to describe kind of what that audience looks like and really kind of feed what our customer and what feet on the street would say about something. It's coral reef protection, right? Mm-hmm. To protect, to keep kind of the urge to do traditional marketing in balance with what people want to hear and what they can absorb.
Amy, what I love about what you're saying is that it fits you back into the org chart in a way that people can understand even without understanding your magic. And I find that interesting because I can easily see you, you know, building out a successful influencer marketing program at SolidFire and, you know, being in a great position to be VP of public relations or communications at any company you want, which I don't think that sort of trajectory was clear when we started this podcast 2 years ago.
Oh, no way. And I think even, you know, we've all sort of laughed and said, you know, we walked away from the concept of just the social media title. I don't think there's anything wrong with that title. It's certainly not meant to insult anyone at all. I think that what we are doing and do, social media still speaks to a set of tools, but you have to be in tune with a lot of different things to use the tools effectively. So yeah, it turns out this very is a very people-centered job, and some of my closest work is done with people who seem to sit on the opposite side of the fence, that if we'd had them on the podcast a year and a half ago, we would have absolutely been dark side versus the rebels. because a couple of the people I work with most closely are on the paid social media side of the fence and paid digital. And the meetings are just hilarious. They're like, oh, you guys want to give everything away for free. And I'm like, oh, gate everything. And but because we sit in different places organizationally, it comes out wonderfully in the middle. So there's a organizational firewall. We don't report up through the same chain. And I can argue, tastes great. They can argue less filling. And we actually come to better marketing because of it.
Mm, nice. Nice.
So their MBOs are not mine. And therefore, we can disagree and still meet in the middle and come up with a better solution than if either one of us had had our way and stomped off.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've also found that, you know, a little paid promotion can help the free stuff, too.
Nothing like a little bump.
They have I have learned a ton. And it really, I think that's been one of the most exciting things that I hadn't expected is how much I would learn how quickly in a smaller environment where you just have to.
Nice, nice. You know, hearing all these stories and thinking about the last couple of years of the Geek Whisperers, I actually think it's very much in line with the directions we were going and very congruent with kind of the values and interests and messages and tactics and strategies we've been talking about for like, I don't know, 3 years now on this thing. It is, but let me ask all the other two of you, and I'll contribute too. Since this is kind of a career show now, how surprised are you that you are where you are doing what you're doing now compared to 2 or 3 years ago, with one being not surprised at all? This makes perfect sense. I had this all planned out. To 10 being, I have no idea how I got here. So Matt, why don't you start us off? How surprised are you that you are where you are?
Oh,
I'm dying to know. He's the metrics person.
I have no idea what you guys are going to say, actually.
Let's say a 7. I'd say a solid 7.
7 being moderately surprised, then.
Moderately surprised, yeah. Because what I've grown confident in is my ability to curate community in a meaningful way as somebody that understands technology, or at least picks it up quite quickly so I can be a synthesizer of information, but really somebody that focuses on that community building aspect and how to do that well, and how that plugs into marketing. I felt pretty solid that, you know, marketing more than ever is going to be the org chart I'm plugging into. Yet I am a developer advocate for a really interesting tech company that focuses on open source and distributed systems. And I find myself in a position where I'm also speaking a lot. So I, for my own credibility, I'm learning a ton, which means I'm effectively becoming a better engineer again. In this way, I didn't intend to, because I was kind of resolved to be a marketer. So,
oh, interesting. Okay, I can see why that's a little surprising.
Yeah, so that's the surprising element of it. It's not the job title itself. I think the way it's synthesized, and you know, it's kind of all predictable when I look back on it. But if I was to put myself 2 years in the past, I don't think I would be focusing on distributed databases and understanding CAP theorem in detail. Like I am right now.
Well, that's a little bit arbitrary. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't know the field, but yeah, I see how the pieces all fit together, and I see how one connects back to the other. So I see how you got where you got. But you're right. You're doing more speaking and more engineering, both of which you weren't doing a couple of years ago.
Yeah, So I really do think it's important to differentiate that. I knew what I cared about, which is the community building aspect, and I'm just willing to take on whatever else it takes to surround myself with that. And that right now, what the void I'm filling is somebody who can synthesize and tell a good story from, you know, 10,000 feet down to, you know, 100 feet sometimes.
And I would like to say, in the hippy-dippy approach, that you had a moment of acceptance live here on the show that you were a marketer. And once you stopped fighting it, you were able to become an engineer again.
Oh, this my is, goodness.
It's like a weird Zen moment that I won't understand until...
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really freaking weird now that you say it that way. All right, keep going.
You're welcome.
Well, and I'm extrapolating that line out to the future, Matt, and I have big plans for you. I've got big expectations. Anyway, Amy, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not surprised at all, 10 being very surprised, are you surprised at all by the place you find yourself in now here in 2015?
I am absolutely a 10, but that speaks to my improvisational nature, and that should shock no one, right? When you look back, it all makes sense. And we've talked about this before. You know, none of us have a direct career path. the thing we've learned by interviewing all these incredibly smart people about their career path is curiosity and kind of just go do it, right? And I am insatiably curious, and I would go out and try things, fly or fail, against potentially better judgment. And that's how I got here. But I had no way of knowing where the path would lead. And I'm always so respectful and borderline envious of folks like Josh Atwell, who came on and on the show and did an amazing job talking about how he had everything kind of scripted. He's got plans. He works against goal. Again, an engineer's engineer, an architect's architect, right? That's amazing. And I am equally the opposite. Perhaps that's why we get along so well. That I'm feeling my way through. And to say that, you know, a couple years ago, kicking off Engineers Unplugged, to see that it's continuing now, to start something that continues after I left, is pretty amazing in and of itself. It's kind of cool to go out there and watch that. And to challenge myself to do the next new thing, right? Because I don't know where it will lead. I just know that if I stay curious, try to do the right thing for the company, and stick to what I'm good at, then I'll, to Matt's point, like, I'll keep getting better at it. I'm putting in 10,000 hours. I just don't know for what yet.
Interesting, though, that you came out at a 10. Okay, I guess you're in a place you didn't predict, doing things you didn't predict. I'll take that answer.
You know, I haven't been on Twitter, but just over 4 years. Like, I never went to a tech conference. That's the crazy story of Cisco Live 2011 is the first tech conference I went to in my entire life. This is all very new for me relative to a lot of people's career and trajectory. So, yeah. It's shocking.
Well, yeah, the weird thing is it happens very slowly, but all at once, it's at the same time. Right. It feels like it's been slow. It feels like it's been ages. But yeah, it's been 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that weird?
When I did my first startup, it was only 3 years long, but it seemed like it was a lifetime. Right. When you're in it, it's like this is terrible. This is the crazy experience I've ever had. But in retrospect, it was just 3 years. Like if you could do something super interesting every 3 years of your life, you know, we would all be James Bond or something. You know, I was going to go a completely different way for me. I was going to say two or three. Like, I'm not surprised at all I am where I am. But I set up the question so it was a few years ago. So versus a few years ago. So a few years ago, I kind of knew I wanted to leave VMware. I had done a lot of the things I wanted to do at VMware. You know, I was interested in starting a new company. I'd done that in the past. I knew that I wanted to keep it small and not take venture capital at all so that I would be consulting. I knew that that would be challenging, kind of doing both at once. So I'm not that surprised I'm doing this here, what I'm doing. And I'm doing kind of the same things that I was known for at VMware. Now, if you take it over 10 years, from 10 years ago, I'm totally with you, Amy. I joined VMware on a lark because I needed a gig and I thought it would be kind of interesting for a year. And I had no idea any of this stuff was going to happen to me. So from my time horizon, 10 years, completely, I have no idea. This was an interesting place to end up, but I'm going with it. But yeah, 2 or 3 years ago, I think I was starting to lay the foundations for this. So I kind of see where it's going. It's, like I said, it's going slightly slower than I wanted to go, but I'm just one person. So I guess in retrospect, that's not surprising. Does that seem foolishly hubristic of me to say I know what I'm doing?
No.
No, I think you're a planner. It's back to the whole, I think you, there's no right answer.
And by planner, you meant overthinker.
You yeah, like I how don't I know always say things positive?
John doesn't dig like the planning, but you're definitely a thinker, right? Like you know the direction you're going, or at least you're intending to go.
You know, I'm okay with the self label of overthinker. I do over. Yeah. I'm an academic, right? I do overthink things.
What I do also like to pull out of this, despite our number discrepancies, is that each and every one of us have been working daily or weekly over years in the past few years to get to where we are, shifting focuses or shifting conversations so that each one of our positions are a great fit for us today. And I think while each one of us would also love for things to change overnight sometimes. I think the only thing I'm certain of is that what you work on day to day is going to change what you're doing in a year or two.
Ooh, that's good too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think when people feel sort of ground down, that's a wonderful thing to look and remember of, I do kind of believe we're logging 10,000 hours towards something, and it's up to each of us to figure out what that is.
Yeah, yeah. Our activities become habits, and our habits become our job, to paraphrase somebody.
The last thing I thought I would be doing is becoming sort of a video production person who directs people with really smart people by my side, but I've created a lot of video at this point. That's the last thing on earth that I thought, that's exactly what I'll be doing when I got my English poli-sci degree after walking away from chemistry. I mean, no, what on earth, you know? But in the end, it's people and stories.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting, interesting. Yeah, yeah, you're right. Matt probably didn't think he'd be speaking or as much as he is, or engineering-y. I didn't, you know, I may be starting a podcasting whole arm of what I do, which, again, who the hell knew? Anyway, fabulous. This has been great syncing up with both of you folks and reflecting a little bit. We really didn't know where we were going to go with this podcast. I think we ended up in a great place. I found it interesting. I hope everybody did too. This has been another week of the Geek Whisperers. We really need a new outro. Maybe we'll have one by the time this podcast airs.
But, don't lie to the people.
You're going to have the same music that you've always had. That is now a podcast where we talk to geeks about what they're up to, where they've been, and where they're going. Anyway, it's been another week of the Geek Whisperers. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.